Hello and welcome to the Talking Techniques podcast, brought to you by Biotechniques. This show brings you the latest from the frontiers of the life sciences, straight from the people exploring them. I'm your host, Biotechniques Senior Editor Tristan Free, and on this episode we're speaking to Hannah Van Ooyen, Immunology Application Scientist at Pixelgen Technologies, to discuss immune cell membrane proteins and the techniques used to investigate them. Hannah, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks, Tristan. It's a real pleasure to be here.
Coming up, discover the complexity of the cell surface proteome in immunological contexts.
We see changes not only in the upregulation of these proteins, including activation markers, but we also see quite profound reorganization where proteins come together to form large-scale clusters due to the activation. And as often seen with immune cells, there is a heterogeneity, and not all cells show this kind of change in phenotype. And this could possibly indicate the differential state of some of the cells.
The limitations of current technologies to investigate the cell surface proteome.
You can try to increase the multiplexing by doing sequential analysis using microscopy, but this instead has drawbacks on the throughput because it will take a lot of time and it requires the user to optimize stainings, optimize microscope settings, and be part of the actual acquisition for every single image.
And find out how a new technique is starting to change the way researchers can interrogate these proteins and their spatial relationships.
And using this technique, we can generate three-dimensional maps of the surface of single immune cells. And we actually map 80 proteins in 1,000 cells simultaneously.
So firstly, to start things going, please could you tell us a bit about yourself and your work at Pixelgen?
Yeah, sure. So I'm an immunology application scientist at Pixelgen Technologies. And at Pixelgen, we have developed a new technique, which is called molecular pixelation. And this is a technique that can be used to map the spatial organization of membrane proteins on individual immune cells, but without using microscopy. So my role at Pixelgen is to generate application cases to kind of inspire customers as how they can use this technology to answer some of their immunological questions.
Fantastic. And so what are the kind of key focuses of some of your current projects? What are some of those application specialties that you're highlighting?
Yeah. So for instance, we have a new application note that is coming out quite soon. And in this note, we have looked at how activating T cells with mitogen can induce changes in the organization of membrane proteins in these cells. So what we know since before is that T cells, when they get activated, they quite dramatically change their expression profile of membrane proteins, and they upregulate specific markers that are often used to kind of identify activated cells. Something that I find really interesting with the results that we have from this molecular pixelation study is that we see changes not only in the upregulation of these proteins, including activation markers, but we also see quite profound reorganization where proteins come together to form large-scale clusters due to the activation. And as often seen with immune cells, there is a heterogeneity and not all cells show this kind of change in phenotype. And this could possibly indicate the differential state of some of the cells.
Fantastic. And so, sorry, you've mentioned there a lot about membrane proteins and their importance in the study of immune cells, such as T cells. So could you expand on their role in immune function?
Sure. So thinking about the cell and the fact that the cell membrane is kind of the barrier between the cell and the surroundings, I think it's quite clear that the cell really needs means of communicating with the surroundings. And pretty much all of this communication goes through membrane proteins in one way or another. So if we look at immune cells or we take a T cell, for example, it could be very local contact-dependent communication. And that is seen, for example, when a T cell is communicating with an antigen-presenting cell during activation. But it could also be more distant examples, for example, when a T cell is recruited to the site of inflammation through chemokine attraction. So I think it's quite obvious to anyone that the presence of specific membrane proteins and the signaling molecules is important for the response of the cell. But what is becoming more and more evident is also that how specific receptors and signaling molecules are organized on the cell membrane is actually very important for their functional outcome. So if we again take the example of a T cell being activated by an antigen-presenting cell, the initial step of the interaction is antigen binding by the T cell receptor on the T cell. And this activates the receptor, but it also induces a nanoclustering of the T cell receptor. And this actually leads to a cascade of signals that ultimately results in a very big reorganization of many different proteins. that forms a complex structure, which is often called immune synapse. And this structure is very interesting to look at. It has been studied with a microscopy, for example, because it has very clear structural features. So, for example, you see the T-cell receptor and other co-activating receptors clustering in a central spot. And then surrounding this cluster, you have integrins, which mediate cell adhesion between the two cells. And since this interaction is it's a very tight space, typically only 50 nanometers, bigger proteins that have big extracellular domains like CD45, they kind of get pushed out from the immune synapse space. So the polarization of different proteins actually makes it possible for the cells to carry out different function on different spaces of the cell body, so to say. And this is very, very important for the function because, for example, T-cells, they have the potential to kill other cells. And of course, it's very important for the T-cell to be able to kill only a virus-infected cell and not any surrounding healthy cells. So this directed response to a specific site on the cell membrane, it's a key feature of many signaling events, actually. And the immune synapse, it's an example of a very large reorganization. It's typically micrometer-sized clusters. But there are also many examples where you see functional domains in more of a nanometer range. And it's also very important to note that all of these structures on the cell membrane, they are very dynamic, so that the cell doesn't just acquire one configuration and keep it forever, but instead the membrane proteins are constantly reorganized depending on the signaling and the needs. And this reorganization is really mediated by many different processes, both within the cell. So the actin cytoskeleton is very important for pushing different proteins to different places. But also extracellular things like galactins can bind to carbohydrate molecules on the cell surface and induce clustering of these receptors. And lastly, lipid protein and protein-protein interactions within the cell membrane also help in affecting this organization. So I think it's interesting that although it's quite obvious that most immune cell signaling involves the organization of membrane proteins, it's quite surprising maybe that most immune cell studies are actually carried out through the analysis of protein abundance only.
So there's a huge amount of complexity there and also a huge amount of dynamism, which obviously adds to that complexity. Mm. Everything's moving around. It's not expressed continuously. It's changing on the cell surface. What are some of the techniques that people have used traditionally to study and investigate these cell surface membrane proteins?
Yeah, so it's kind of two different arms. So in general, when we talk about immune cell research, you do need to go into single cell technologies, and those are the preferred methods. And the reason for this is that immune cells are so highly heterogeneous, and that is both in terms of their expression profile, but also in their functional response. And in immunology, undoubtedly, the most popular technology for studying immune cells is flow cytometry. So in flow cytometry, you label proteins with fluorophores or fluorophore-conjugated antibodies, and then you detect the presence of a protein through fluorescent signal. And this technique is based on a liquid stream, so it has very high throughput, and you can typically analyze thousands of cells within a few minutes. Another benefit is that you have the capability of looking at several different proteins simultaneously if you use different fluorophores conjugated to different antibodies. However, you are limited because you cannot combine infinite amount of number of fluorophores due to spectral overlap and spectral crosstalk. But there are methods that try to increase this multiplexing capability that are quite similar to flow cytometry, for example, mass cytometry. It's commonly known as CyTOF. And here, instead of using fluorophores to detect antibodies, you use heavy metals and you detect their presence using mass spectrometry. The main readout of both of these methods is typically protein abundance. But as I described earlier, it's not only the abundance that is important for immune cell function, but also the organization of the membrane protein. So that kind of leads us to the second arm of technologies that are used for analyzing membrane organization and membrane proteins. And the gold standard for measuring organization has really been fluorescent microscopy. So it's a very powerful technology, as you can really see where on a cell a particular protein or structure is located. And there has been a lot of recent advancement in fluorescent microscopy through development of super resolution microscopy that continuously reduce the resolution, making it possible to resolve very, very small structures on the cells. To some extent, electron microscopy has also been used for some specific questions, if you really need single molecule resolution. But here, of course, you can only really look at one protein marker if you want to label it. And it also requires very quite expertise knowledge for sample prep and et cetera.
And how have these techniques improved in recent years? And what kind of resulting discoveries have we had in immunology?
There are other clever methods of trying to increasing the resolution also in fluorescent microscopy. So for example, you can study protein-protein interaction through using methods that are really only detecting extreme physical proximity of proteins. So for example, FRET or PLA, proximity ligation assay. And these are used to specifically verify physical interaction between two proteins. So I would say using various microscopy techniques, there has been real advancement in the field of immunology, for example, when looking at immune cell recognition. And this has given us insights into how activating and inhibitory receptors are functioning, how immune cells sense their surroundings using microvilli, and loads of other groundbreaking discoveries.
You've mentioned those suite of techniques. So there's those first two, which look mostly at a sort of abundance of different proteins. And then you're getting, with the microscopy, a much better look at where things are actually located on the surface of the cell, and getting those readouts. But you're slightly limited by the number of different proteins that you can analyze at one time. What are some of the other challenges that you experience of investigating these membrane proteins with those existing techniques and what they can deliver for you?
Yeah, so indeed, microscopy can really provide powerful insight into the function of surface proteins, and it is a great tool to validate the suspected protein-protein interactions. But if you really want to make novel discoveries where you kind of don't know what you're looking for and you want to find new targets, it's not really that useful because you need more multiplexed technologies. So one thing is also that you can try to increase the multiplexing by doing sequential analysis using microscopy, but this instead has drawbacks on the throughput because it will take a lot of time and it requires the user to optimize stainings, optimize microscope settings, and be part of the actual acquisition for every single image. And so microscopy typically suffers from both multiplexing and throughput compatibility. There are developments of automated microscopy systems to reduce this labor a little bit, but right now these technologies are only really available to specialized users. And to be honest, irrespective of how you acquire the images, everyone who has worked with microscopy, including myself, knows that it's quite difficult and time-consuming to perform the analysis of these images. So I think there really is a need for new, more high-throughput single-cell spatial analysis methods.
Presumably, if you're doing sequential staining on the same tissue sample or cell sample that you're trying to look at and analyze the cell surface proteins on there as well, is that not damaging your sample as well that you're looking at and sort of making it more difficult to read out? Or is it how many times can you do that sequential staining and imaging process?
So it's particularly problematic if you want to look at suspension cells, as is often the case with immune cells, as they exist in the blood flow, they are in suspension. So in microscopy, if you want to do sequential staining, you need to adhere them to a surface in somehow. And the adherence to a surface can affect the protein distribution on the cell surface. So this is also a problem with doing this kind of sequential analysis where you need to immobilize your cells.
And so how then is your work at PixelJet looking to overcome those challenges with the existing techniques, and how are you trying to address this issue?
So at PixelGen, we really wanted to develop a completely new technology that could kind of combine the benefits of high multiplexing, high throughput, and spatial resolution into one single method. And this is something that hasn't really been possible with the existing technologies. So we have developed a method that we call molecular pixelation, and this can be used to look at membrane proteins in immune cells. And using this technique, we can generate three-dimensional maps of the surface of single immune cells. And we actually map 80 proteins in 1,000 cells simultaneously. And this is done using next-generation sequencing and not microscopy, so we don't really suffer from the same drawbacks as microscopy do.
So are there any other advantages of this technology over some of these existing technologies out there?
Yeah, so one key advantage of molecular pixelation for spatial analysis is really its simplicity. So many of these advanced single-cell methods require specialized users, and therefore many labs actually focus projects mainly around one or a few technologies. But with this technology, anyone with a basic pipetting skill or basic pipetting skills can actually carry out a molecular pixelation protocol, and then they just send the samples to closest facility for standard sequencing. And this makes it possible to include molecular pixelation in pretty much any project without the need for recruitment or training of employees, etc.
And could you explain how this technique works? What are its operating principles?
So the general workflow principle is that we fix the surface proteome of the cells, and then we coat the cells with antibodies. And each of these antibodies is conjugated with a unique oligonucleotide sequence. So in order to identify where each unique antibody is located, we carry out two reaction steps. And for each of these steps, we add a common barcode to antibodies that are close in proximity. So we can identify that they are actually in the same small neighborhood, or in the same pixel, as we call it. And then we do this step twice, first creating these small neighborhoods of proteins, and then connecting these neighborhoods to form a large-scale map of the proteins on the cell membrane. And since our panel also contains 80 different antibody targets, this surface map will actually contain information on how each of these 80 proteins are located in relation to both themselves and to the other 79 proteins. So, for example, by looking at how a specific marker is distributed over the cell surface, we can define a polarization score for that marker, meaning a measurement of how clustered the protein is. Additionally, we can investigate if two markers occur in more close proximity to each other than what would be expected by chance. And this is a measure that we call colocalization score. So something that is really unique is that we can create colocalization maps of many proteins to investigate the formation of complex protein clusters, something that you can't really do using microscopy. So if we compare molecular pixelation to other techniques that have been used in the field previously, I think that we really are filling a gap between high-throughput technologies that measure abundance, like flow cytometry, single-cell RNA sequencing, etc., and those that are based on microscopy for spatial investigations. So in molecular pixelation, we map a whole 80 proteins at once, so we have multiplex capabilities that are superior to both flow and mass cytometry, but what's more is that we get not only the abundance of these 80 proteins in single cells, but we also get their interconnected graph, giving us this information about protein localization on these cells. So a feature that is maybe a little bit hard to wrap your head around if you come from the field of microscopy is that here, since we do the analysis through sequencing, all cells are actually in focus and they are in solution and they are all measured simultaneously.
Fantastic. And do you have any tips of best practice then when you're using that technique and going through that workflow? Is there anything that you need to look out for in terms of pitfalls, or are there any tips that you would have to try and get the most out of it?
So I would say that molecular pixelation is really best suited for assays where you are interested in looking at the behavior of many proteins. This can, for example, be discovery studies where you want to find novel targets to investigate, or if you are interested in studying the organization of multi-protein clusters. I wouldn't really use it if you're only interested in understanding the localization of one already chosen target. Then other techniques like microscopy is much better. But of course, apart from the spatial information, you do also get protein abundance from this method. So it's also a great alternative to flow and RNA-seq, just that you get richer data. One feature maybe to consider when studying membrane organization is that sample quality and the handling is really important for the conclusions that you can draw. There are many factors that affect membrane organization. For example, if you expose yourselves to different temperatures, you can induce protein reorganization. If you bind antibodies to membrane proteins, this often causes clustering. So due to this, it's important that you lock your membrane proteome in a place or you lock it in place at the time that you actually want to study it. So if you're carrying out a certain stimulation, you need to fix your cells, and then after the fixation, you can freeze them or store them for later analysis.
Fantastic. And so do we have any current exciting examples of the use of this technology yet? Has it been able to find something that's been particularly sort of groundbreaking in a different field?
Yeah, so besides the application note that I told about earlier about the T-cell activation, we are also releasing our first method paper, and this will be published in Nature Methods very soon. And in this paper, we are thoroughly describing the technology, and we're also validating it using both flow cytometry and microscopy. But we're also exploring a few application examples in the paper. So for instance, we have looked at protein reorganization during T-cell migration. And we show that molecular pixelation could actually be applied to identifying proteins that are recruited to the uropod of migrating cells. And here we could measure both an increase in polarization and also in co-localization of a number of uropod-associated proteins. Apart from this, we also show how the technique can be used to study drug-mediated receptor clustering. And in this case, we use the therapeutic antibody rituximab to induce clustering of CD20 on the surface of B cells. And this is a product that we have launched very recently, just a few months ago. But it's really exciting, actually, to see that we are now beginning to get customer presenting data that they have generated and seeing how new questions are really being answered with this new technology.
And so when you look to the future of immunology and the application of this technique, how do you see this technique being applied in the future? What kind of impacts do you think it could have?
So personally, I'm really looking forward to seeing how the possibility of mapping large-scale protein organization can actually help in discovering new cellular states. And this can be both for immunology research, basic immunology research, but also for finding means of early and more accurate diagnostics. So it has previously been shown that cancer cells can change their expression of protein organizing regulators, for example, tetraspanins. And in solid cancer, the expression of these regulators actually affect the metastatic capability of these cancer cells. Another example in the oncology field is in B-cell cancers, where cancer cells actually have been shown to alter their B-cell receptor clustering. And this can cause a continuous cell activation, which mediates survival benefits and can aid in cancer progression. So apart from kind of finding novel means of diagnostics, I really think that this technology can also aid in discoveries of disease and drug mechanisms of action. For example, it has been recently demonstrated that the function of a receptor is actually dependent not only on its interaction with ligands in trans, so meaning on a different cell, but it can also be that the protein is interacting in cis, meaning on the cell's own membrane. So, for example, it has been shown that cis interactions of a checkpoint ligand PD-L1 can actually affect the response to checkpoint blockade therapy. So I'm really keen on seeing how this increase in throughput and multiplexing for spatial analysis can aid in novel discoveries for drug development. And we are actually already having customers using molecular pixelation to select drug candidates to move on in their discovery program. And this is very exciting, I think.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast, Hannah. It's been wonderful to hear about the applications of this technology in the examination of disease biology and early drug design and discovery, and also how it's been designed to address some of those challenges with flow cytometry and mass cytometry when it comes to understanding the cell surface proteome, and also how it builds on and kind of gives you a greater insight into protein expression on cells than traditional fluorescence microscopy methods. And it's been really exciting to hear how this could lead towards much greater insight for immunology in the future. So thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks a lot.
And thank you for our listeners for tuning in. If you've enjoyed this episode and would like to find out more, you can check out the podcast section of our website on www.biotinics.com or follow @SciTristan on Twitter for regular updates and threads on our latest episodes. And if you want to find out more about molecular pixelation, you can check out our InFocus on site. Thank you for listening. And goodbye.